This is Bristol, and you are listening to a podcast from the Bristol Confringe reading series. Alrighty, folks, it's time to get going again. And our second reader of the night, first time at Bristol Con, and I believe all the way from Aberystwyth. Abergavenny. Oh, Abergavenny. Wrong piece of Wales. Yes, so there you go. Let's try that again. All the way from Abergavenny, please welcome Mr. Tim Lebon.
I'll put that there. I'm going to electrocute everybody. Hi, guys. Thanks a lot for having me this evening. I'm shorter. Here we go. Okay, I'm going to read an extract from a novel I've got coming out. Malfunction. I've got a novel coming out next March called Relics from Titan, which I actually finished writing about a year and a half ago. That's publishing. So I'll give you a little... I'm going to read an extract which is from sort of a third of the way through the book. So I'll give you a little bit of background on it first. In Relics... character called Vince is a relic hunter, so he tracks down relics and sort of fossils of fantastical creatures that used to exist. So he'll find you a unicorn horn or a baby cyclops head fossilized. But he soon realizes he's not only tracking down old relics, but there are fresh relics. So these creatures actually still exist in the world as well. And people hunt them and kill them to collect parts of their bodies for medicines and for exotic dining experiences, which could be quite interesting. So Vince, on discovering this, rescued a nymph called Lilu from two relic hunters, and in doing so, he killed two relic hunters. So now he's in hiding with Lilu. His girlfriend, Angela, doesn't know anything about this. He's leading a double life. So the book sort of concentrates on Angela trying to hunt down Vince and find where he's gone. But this extract I'm going to read you is, it actually features Vince. He's escaped, he's got away from Lilu, who was looking after him. And he's been captured now by a creature who wants some information out of him. So this extract's also sort of water-based. It's based in a swimming pool instead of the sea. So this extract is, like I say, is from about a third of the way through the book. And this is Vince just coming to after he's been captured. Sickening stench made him queasy with every breath. Panic bit hard. If he vomited, he'd choke, a wretched death, drowning in the puke that would never make it past the gag in his mouth. His tongue was swollen and dry, and every time he unstuck it from the roof of his mouth, it hurt more. He was blindfolded. However hard he strained his head and neck or turned his eyes, he could see nothing but the vaguest hint of light. His wrists were tied behind him, arms in turn tied to a rigid metal chair. His arse and legs were numb, and a fire had been set in each shoulder. Every time he moved, they flared more, spearing flames through his pressurized joints and stretched muscles. Stay calm, Vince told himself, because the more he struggled, the more it hurt. The more he panicked, the harder it was to draw the next breath. Every sound echoed around him. At first, he thought it was his hearing, distorted by the blood flow pulsing through his ears. But he'd settled as much as he could, heart rate slowing, and then scooted the chair to the left. The scrape had echoed, taking several seconds to fade away. He was shut away in a large space. He hadn't caught a good look at the man who'd taken him, but he'd been big, immensely strong, and he'd stank. Not just an aroma of sweat or dirt, but a true animal stench. Nothing as bad as what he could smell now, though. At least his kidnapper scent, bad though it had been, was of something living. All he wanted to know was that Angela was safe, but nothing of what he recalled could guarantee that. She'd looked his way, he'd ducked down instinctively, and then the screaming and violence. He should have gone to her and dragged her away, but even then his fear for her had been a confused, fractured concept. If he went closer, would he put her more at risk? If they caught him with her, wouldn't they kill them both? So he turned to run, feeling dreadful for ever having returned there at all. He should have remained in that little cell with Lilu tending him, making sure he was all right. And of course, she would do that because he'd saved her. Whoever she was, whatever she was, her gratitude was obvious and her concern for him palpable. He'd betrayed that. In the darkness, the man had tripped him, punched him so hard that he saw stars. When he came to, he saw cars and buildings and realized he was being carried. He tried to struggle, an elbow to the face, and he saw nothing else. Now, helpless, constantly on the verge of drowning himself in his own vomit, Vince waited for whatever was to come. If they removed the mask and he saw that bitch Claudette's face, he'd know that whatever future he had would be unbearably painful. He tried to mock her, tell her how her brother had shit his pants that he'd fallen in front of the train. Maybe that would make her kill him quickly. But I don't want to die. The thought brought back the panic. His breathing increased and he drew in great lungfuls of the rancid stink that filled the place. Trying to calm himself again, willing his fear to subside, he heard footsteps. Vince held his breath and tilted his head, attempting to hear more clearly. Metal-clad shoes, perhaps, or heavy clogs of some kind. But the man who'd taken him had run quickly, and he couldn't imagine anyone maintaining any sort of speed with heavy, clopping shoes. Past the stench of rotten ruin that he'd been trying to ignore, he could now smell the man. It was a wet animal scent, like a wet dog that had rolled in shit, and though horrible, it was also strangely comforting. Something alive instead of the death that had assailed him since being tied here. His blindfold was ripped away. His gag was tugged free. Vince gasped and squinted in shock, but wherever he was remained dim. As his eyesight slowly returned, he saw only shadows and the hints of shapes. The man paced behind him, just out of sight. "Where are we?" Vince asked. "Oh, if you're going to be that stupid, I might as well just throw you in with the rest." The voice was deep and strong, but tinged with the gravelly edge of age. Its owner remained out of sight. His vision improved, or maybe the dawn light filtering through the high-level windows was increasing, but it revealed the sad truth of Vince's surroundings. They were in an old swimming facility. It must have been closed for years. Once white walls were smeared with moss and slime. Lines of steel changing rooms were rusted stiff with doors half open or fallen off. Higher up, the sloping ceiling had holes in it. Some panels tumbled away, others grown black with decay. Two lines of windows ran lengthways high up at the ridge. Many were smashed, and most of them sprouted weeds that grew in from the roof level outside. On the end wall was an old analog clock and scoreboard, swathed in dust-filled webs hanging like children's forgotten shrieks. This would have been a fun place once, but now it was lost and fallen to ruin. Vince was sitting in a chair at the pool's shallow end. Tiles were cracked and missing and black with moss. Ahead of him, in the deep end, a low level of water remained. It was here that the stink came from. The water, black and stagnant, was not level. Things protruded. "I can't swim," Vince said. His voice was barely a whisper, mouth dried, tongue swollen. His jaw ached, and he could feel the rough terrain of split lips and dried blood. "Neither can they," the voice said, high and hysterical. It was followed by a laugh, brief but high-pitched. It seemed to screech through the man's throat. "What are they?" Vince wondered. He strained to see, but it was still too gloomy to make out the other end of the pool. Maybe some of the shapes he saw there were limbs. The place certainly smelled like death. "You kill them," he asked. "Ask me if I can dance." Vince went to say something else, but thought better of it. "Can you dance?" "Maybe." Feet clopped and clapped, chipping slivers from broken ceramic tiles. "Maybe not." "So can we talk face to face?" Vince asked. "Oh, I'd like that very much indeed," the voice said, low and serious once more. The footsteps slowed and moved, and a shape circled around from Vince's left. The man was close to 7 feet tall. Exaggerated, almost simian features, a once strong body now gone slack and covered with coarse grey hair, and the legs of a goat. Vince's eyes went wide and he looked away, doubting what he was seeing. Even after what he'd come to know, the truths that had been laid out before him, he doubted. "What's wrong?" the man thing said. "Embarrassed?" Vince glanced at him again. Scrappy fur covered his legs and formed a scruffy collar around his hooves. Between those legs hung a cock the likes of which Vince had only ever seen in porn films. It swung like a metronome as he swayed from foot to foot. "Ah, useless thing," the man thing cried, that manic voice once again. He slapped at his cock and it swayed left, right, left again before its weight hung it straight down. "Too old, too drunk, too angry, I don't know. But it's had its fun. It's had more than its share of fun." "Who are you?" Vince asked, looking at the man's face. He might have been called ugly, with pronounced features and a bristly beard, but he could also imagine Angela calling him rugged. A lived-in look, she'd say. "There's a man who's had a life." "I'm Ballas, last of the satyrs." Ballas frowned, creasing that rugged face. I think I'm the last anyway. If not, soon will be. Very soon. What do you want with me? I want information. Ballas laughed. You're number six. He shrieked. High in the shadowy roof space, several birds shrilled and took flight, flapping invisibly in the grimy dawn. I'm not a number, Vince said. He smiled, hoping to ingratiate himself with this man, this thing, but Ballas was pacing back and forth, skipping now and then in a half dance. He mumbled to himself. Vince strained at his bindings. His shoulders burned and pins and needles bit into his arms and hands. His wrists felt cool and wet, air breathing on fresh blood. You won't get free, Ballas said, suddenly standing still and staring at Vince. He shifted from foot to foot, hoof to hoof, grinding broken tiles beneath. His face grew slack, mouth hanging slightly open, great bristles on his chin and around his mouth glimmering with moisture. Look, what do you want with me, Vince said. I'm helping you. I saved Lilu, and because of that... Did you fuck her? What? Vince felt a rush of guilt, a heat in his face. Don't misjudge me, human, Ballas said. Don't make the mistake of thinking we're all alike. You think a satyr thinks the same as that nymph bitch? You think this satyr? He tapped his grey, hairy chest. Thinks the same as any other satyr. Don't paint me with the same brush. I'm unique. I'm Ballas. I'm the last of my kind. He frowned and looked past Vince, eyes growing vague once again. He's insane, Vince thought. Fucking hell, I'm the prisoner of a mad satyr with a 12-inch schlong. So where are they, Ballas asked. Who? Lilu, Malian, the others. I don't know any Malian. Ballas snorted, bullish and furious, and stamped his hoof, a tile shattered. Maybe, okay, so where's Lilu? Vince shook his head. He couldn't tell him. If Ballas didn't know, there must be a reason for that. And if there was a reason, he had no wish to give Lilu's hiding place away. She kept him safe, and he'd betrayed her by escaping and putting himself in danger. He wouldn't betray her again. Don't know, Ballas asked. Won't say. Same thing, Vince said. Oh no, not the same at all. Ballas came for him, and Vince flinched back in the chair, almost flipping it onto its back. If he did that, he'd trap his hands and arms, and might even break them if he fell hard enough. He held his breath and shifted his weight forward, tipping the chair back onto four legs. Close up, Ballas was even more intimidating. He filled Vince's field of vision, a thing that should not be, living and breathing so close to him that he could taste the satyr's breath. It was stale and old, but strangely not as disgusting as he'd have thought, like spilled ale the morning after. You don't know anything really, Ballas said. He moved even closer. Close enough to kiss. Vince felt the heat of him. Your knowledge hardly breaks the surface. You're feeling dislocated from reality, probably. Me being here, talking to you, existing, alive, goes against everything you've ever known, everything you've ever been taught, but learning never ends. I know you're real. I know you know, Ballas said. I'm in your space. Right now, I'm your whole world. Ballas's face dropped a little, and he reached around Vince to touch his arm tight behind the chair's back. And I'm sorry about this, but it's more than necessary. You'll never really know how important this is, how urgent it is you tell me what I need to know. It's a matter of life and death. He eased himself upright and stepped back, hooves clipping lightly on the broken tiles. Where are they? Vince frowned as if trying to think. He looked away from Ballas towards the edge of the empty pool, trying to ground himself in reality again. But this was reality. His hands really were tied and bleeding. His shoulders really were on fire. He'd seen this beast murder someone brutally in his and Angela's street. I don't know, he said. Where are they? I don't know. Ballas moved again, striding across the pool and back again, walking widths. Where are they? How old are you? Vince asked. He really was interested, but he also hoped that asking questions back might distract Ballas from his own questioning. He sensed a solid ego in this man thing. Something large that could be teased and stroked. He couldn't help looking at the satyr's flaccid, swinging dick. Useless thing, Ballas had said. What was a satyr without his cock? Ballas paused in his pacing and stared at Vince again. Where are they? Look, honestly, I don't know where they are, Vince said. I got away in the night. I was worried about Angela. It was dark and... You should be worried, Ballas said. Why? What do you mean? Where are they? Why should I be worried about Angela? They won't hurt her because they think she'll leave them to me. It was what he'd banked on and why he'd drawn back when he saw her. Perhaps much later, if Mary Rock's people didn't catch up with him, then maybe they might see her as a target for revenge, but not yet. For now, he was their prime focus. It was his blood they craved. Who do you work for? Vince asked, and Ballas froze for a second before releasing one of his high shrieks again. He skipped across the pool, fragmented tiles flipping up behind him and catching the growing light. Vince didn't think it would ever be fully light in here because the windows were too overgrown and smeared with filth, and he was glad. He wasn't sure he wanted to make out this place in any great detail. Ballas stopped and stared at him again. Where are they? Vince shook his head and looked down at his knees. The satyr mumbled to himself, a sound like rocks rolled in a box. He turned his back on Vince and ran along the pool, down toward the deep end where the stinking shallow still held out against the dawn. He splashed into the shallow water there, and moments later, as if him breaking the slick surface released it, a new wave of stink washed over Vince. He struggled, took shallow breaths, bit his torn, bloodied lips, and then leaned forward and puked anyway. Not much came up. He was soon retching, and between each straining cry, he heard Ballas's delighted shrieks. Something hit the pool bottom a few feet from him with a wet thud. Vince heaved again and spat, groaning as his restrained limbs pulsed with pain. Another thud, this one closer, and something splashed across his bare feet. Puke dribbling from his mouth and nose, Vince tried to focus on Ballas, 20 yards away in the deep end, and leaning this way and that as he plucked objects from the rancid, watery stew. The satyr froze, then dashed to his left, as if he'd seen something he'd been searching for. Here, he said, plucking something from the water, turning, holding it up triumphantly. This. He threw, and the object sailed through the air. Vince cringed, trying to pull his head down and shoulders up. The thing struck his right cheek and shoulder. It was wet, heavy, slick, sticky. And when it tumbled to his lap and then to the floor, he smelled its unbelievable awfulness. When he looked, he saw a wing. It was leathery, folded, its veins raised and solid. A slick film covered it, glimmering in the weak dawn light. Its leading edge was heavier and thicker, maybe as wide as the toddler's arm. The skin was riddled with holes, but where it remained whole, there were dark, regular patterns, tattoos. And at its end was a clawed hand. It was the hand that Vince stared at. It wore several golden rings. Her name was Bindi, Ballas said. Did you kill her? Vince asked. Ask me if I can dance. Vince didn't look up. He stared at the hand, the concertinaed wing, but did not look away even when he heard Ballas splashing in the rank waters, talking to himself and whooping in delight when he found something else. Several other parts thumped and splattered down. None of them struck him. Ballas heaved something much heavier and it didn't even come halfway. I still don't know where they are, Vince said. The more Ballas tried to terrify him, the more certain he became that he could never reveal the location of Lilu's hideaway. He didn't know who or what Malian was, but he remembered what Lilu had said the last time they spoke. Promise that you won't try to see who you're talking to. Where are they? Ballas was splashing his way from the shallow, horror-filled water and walking back towards the shallow end. His furred legs were dripping, and he kicked aside some of the body parts he'd hauled out and thrown in Vince's direction. He brought the stink with him. Vince heaved again, and when he'd finished bringing up nothing, Ballas was standing before him. In his hand, he carried a heavy, splintered bone. I'm going to ask you one more time, the satyr said.
BristolCon Fringe is a monthly reading series produced by the BristolCon Foundation. Our thanks to the Shakespeare Tavern for providing us with a venue. The music at the beginning of this podcast is The Future by Chevy 174.